This is going to work. Outside, it was morning. Four Jaegers stood at their launch gantries, with four new sets of thruster pods attached to their backs. Separate smaller impulse thrusters were also attached to their lower legs. Gypsy Avenger already had these, and J-Tech crews had added them to the other Jaegers to increase maneuverability. At dawn, Bracer Phoenix had paused on her journey out to the gantry, so tech crews could do a test deployment of the Morningstar hand grafted on from Titan Redeemer. With everyone in the Shatterdome watching, a remote operation team ran the Morningstar hand system, raising Bracer's right arm. The target was one of the fallen drones, dragged out of the Shatterdome and now lying near the Oceanside lifts. Jake and Lambert were back in the ready room, putting on their drive suits and running pre-deployment checks on their drift helmets. Over their comlinks, they heard the tech crews arguing about something in Mandarin. Then one of them ordered Bracer Phoenix to fire. Jake and Lambert looked up at the video screen in the ready room, which was set to a feed from the tarmac. The Morningstar hand exploded from Bracer Phoenix's arm, crossing the 100 yards of tarmac in less than a second. The impact on the torso of the fallen drone sounded like a bomb going off. Pieces of the drone's armor spun away over the water, and the target itself was blasted off the ground, landing with a splash that slopped waves up to the edge of the tarmac. The water churned around the sinking drone as Bracer Phoenix snapped the Morningstar hand back into place. Waiting Jumphawks, among the few that had survived the attack, dropped cables down to retrieve the drone. As they pulled it up out of the water, they could see the enormous dent in the side of its armor. Both of them were imagining what that would do to a Cat 4 or Cat 5 kaiju, gauging whether it would be enough. Jake glanced over at Lambert. "Guess it works," Lambert said. There wasn't much to add. Bracer wasn't their ride anyway. They finished getting ready and headed for the Shatterdome. Hours after they'd started work on the Jaegers, Jules caught up with Jake and Lambert in the Shatterdome to update them. They were in their drive suits, headed for the launch pads and the long ride up the gantries to Gypsy Avenger's Conpod hatch. Destroyed vehicles and discarded Jaeger parts and armor formed mounds of debris around the cleared areas of the Shatterdome deck. If Gottlieb's crazy plan was going to work, they would all find out soon. The last time they'd talked to him, he was full of enthusiasm. But they couldn't follow the technical details of what he was saying, so they just nodded and let him run out of steam. But the upshot, at least as far as they could tell, was that Gottlieb and Shaolian working together had solved the critical problem with using kaiju blood as fuel. So Jake was cautiously optimistic that the thruster pods wouldn't incinerate them all as soon as someone gave the ignition command. "Saber Athena, Guardian Bravo, and Bracer Phoenix are good to go," Jules said. Jake and Lambert had already signed off Gypsy Avenger. "Not a lot to work with," Jake said. He was wishing they had Titan Redeemer still, but there wasn't time to get her back up and running, especially not since they'd cannibalized several hundred of her parts, including her main weapon system, to speed up repairs to the other Jaegers. "Lien's team kitbashed some Fury tech into Gypsy that might help," Jules added. Jake was about to ask what, but Lambert didn't seem to care. They'd find out sooner or later anyway. "Rep everything we've got for deployment," Lambert said. PBDC policy called for a full deployment of an individual Shatterdome's complement of Jaegers only in extraordinary circumstances. During the war, several Shatterdomes had suffered attacks while defenseless, so the policy made sense. But if ever there had been an extraordinary circumstance, this was it. No point in holding reserves back now. A moment passed between Jules and Lambert. Jake stayed out of it, deliberately looking the other way. There was nobody to see him off and wish him well. Hadn't been in a long time. He was used to it, and he would fight the good fight anyway. "Don't get yourself killed, okay?" Jules said, and kissed Lambert on the cheek. Then she turned to Jake, surprising him. "You either," she said, and kissed him too. Jake and Lambert watched her go. "Well, that's confusing," Jake said. Here he'd been, telling himself how nobody cared, and then Jules had to go and confuse everything. With a frown, Lambert said, "Let's stay on point. We only have 4 Jaegers, against 2 Category 4s and a 5er. Feeling optimistic in the wake of Jules's kiss, Jake said, "Better than just Gypsy." "Still need pilots," Nate said, not willing to concede the point. Jake started walking again, skirting pieces of Titan Redeemer's discarded armor plating. This was the one part of the plan he wasn't worried about. "We have them." The cadets stood in a tight group, wearing their cadet drive suits and holding their helmets. All of them were there but Malin and Tahima, who had been too severely wounded in the drone attack to serve. Jake and Lambert walked up to them and nodded. Jake hoped the gesture was reassuring. He could have used a little reassurance himself. Out in the world, the kaiju-worshipping cults were rejoicing. They knew kaiju had returned, and they had also gotten wind about exactly how the drone program had been corrupted. The sites of the fallen drones were crowded with kaiju worshippers, touching the drones and ritually scarring themselves with the kaiju blood that still seeped from the tissue within. The PBDC and local law enforcement were too overwhelmed trying to cope with the damage to stop them. Cities around the world were burning from the drone attacks, and a fresh wave of fear was causing unrest even in places that hadn't been directly attacked. The kaiju were back. 10 years since the closing of the first breach was enough time for people to begin to believe that it would never happen again. Thus, the calls to scale back the PPDC, devote its resources elsewhere, lower expenses by putting Jaegers under drone remote control. Mako had fought hard on the PPDC's behalf, arguing that the costs of being caught unprepared were unimaginably worse than the costs of keeping up the PPDC. Who could say the precursors would never open another breach? How could they ever know? And how would they look the people of the world in the eye if the PPDC was shut down and a new breach opened and there was nothing to defend them with? Jake was choked with emotion as he considered how she hadn't lived to see just how right she was. And then rage crackled through him. Whether he was under precursor control or not, Newt Geisler had built the Jaeger that killed Mako because she was about to reveal his plan. Jake still didn't know how she'd found out, and PPDC intel services were digging into her records to see what they could learn on that front. But the details weren't important in the end. She had known, and Newt had killed her for it. Or the precursor inside Newt's mind. At that moment, Jake wasn't sure he cared about the distinction. He stood before the cadets, aware of their eyes on him, their expectations of him. He wasn't his father. He wasn't going to come up with a great line like, "Today we are canceling the apocalypse." But he could come at things from a different angle, an angle he understood because he'd lived it. "If my dad were here, he'd probably give a big speech, make you all feel invincible," Jake began. "But I'm not my father. I'm not a hero like he was, like Raleigh Beckett and Mako Mori. But they didn't start out that way either. They started as cadets, just like you. We remember them as giants because they stood tall, because they stood together. It doesn't matter how many tries it took to get here, or who your parents are, or where you came from, or who believed in you and who didn't. You're part of a family now." He glanced over at Lambert and saw his partner acknowledging Jake's callback to Lambert's speech to the cadets a couple of days before. "This is our time. This is our chance to make a difference." The cadets were standing straight and tall now, their young faces set in expressions of resolve. Jake looked from one to the next, making eye contact with each one. He was asking a lot of them, and they wouldn't know if they were up to the challenge until they were inside a conpod with a raging kaiju on the HUD. There was no training for the flicker of terror any human being felt on seeing that. After he'd had a brief moment with each of them, he nodded. "Mount up, and let's get it done." 29. Worldwide panic. Evacuations across Pacific Rim as kaiju pass through multiple breaches. PPDC confirms 3 kaiju. Humanity's worst nightmare came true yesterday as multiple breaches opened up across the Pacific Basin, resulting in the appearance of 3 kaiju and the destruction of many of the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps Shatter Dome bunkers. The kaiju did not immediately make landfall after appearing separately in the East China Sea, the Sea of Japan, and the Sea of Okhotsk. Their current pathways appear to be taking them toward Japan, but all coastal populations are being urged to evacuate. The PPDC refused to confirm reports that the breaches were created by drone Jaegers. Multiple eyewitness accounts claim to have seen drone Jaegers coordinating the breach creations, but Xiao Industries spokespeople have vigorously denied this, saying Xiao Industries and the PPDC are continuing to work in partnership to fight all kaiju threats. The catastrophic failure of the drone program, which resulted in rogue drones destroying several Jaegers and causing incalculable damage in Pacific Rim cities from South America to Russia, is stimulating calls for investigation of Xiao Industries and its founder Xiao Lian. She was understood to be at the Moyolin Shatterdome near Shanghai and was unavailable for comment. More on this developing story as it becomes available. On the gantries, Ranger teams exited the elevators and ducked through their con-pod hatches. Tex, making last-minute adjustments, still scurried up and down the scaffolding, mostly around the thruster pods. Everything else they'd done was working with existing systems that had been tested over a period of years. The thrusters not only hadn't been tested, they hadn't even been through a design process. They were cobbled together from Jumphawk fuel tanks, repurposed V-Dragon thrusters, and fuel lines adapted from plasma feeders. The software controlling them was a series of patched-together code blocks borrowed from other systems. The math checked out, and the materials had been tested under other circumstances, but the history of rocketry was a story of unexpected failures that only had obvious causes after engineers spent months picking through the pieces. Neither the PPDC nor the human race as a whole could afford that today. Among the crews, a strange fatalism prevailed. They had to trust Gottlieb and Shao, so they did. There was no point worrying about what would happen if the thruster pods didn't work, because that wouldn't change the ultimate outcome for any of them. They could either die in an explosion on the tarmac, or die of starvation after the precursors re-engineered Earth's climate. This was a time to take chances. Amara, Jinhai, and Vic got settled in Bracer Phoenix's con pod. The three drift cradles were arranged with two in the front and one in the back, attached to a rail that dropped down to the railgun turret. That was Vic's chair. Amar and Jinhai had the two front ones, responsible for moving Bracer and handling the other weapon systems, including the newly installed Morning Star hand. They had all used it in simulations, but on Titan Redeemer's left arm. Jake and Lambert had warned them it would feel different in Bracer Phoenix. They accepted this warning the same way they accepted the possibility that the thruster pods wouldn't work. In other words, they shrugged it off, because they either had to make it work or they would die. Each of them stood in the holographic rectangles, marking the points where their boots would lock into the maglev field. "Initiating neural handshake," Amara said. They felt the psychic swirl of the drift reaching through them and binding them together. Amara felt cool and resolved, Jinhai a little giddy, Vic excited at the prospect of combat. Jinhai grinned at the readout on his display as the floor dropped away, and they hung in the maglev field. "Neural handshake strong and steady," he said. They could all feel it. They were a team. Jinhai and Vic had spent more than a year training for this. Amara was new to it, but her hard work with Sarah had paid off. "Almond joy," she thought, and she felt the other two react to the joke. "So," Vic said, "how's it feel to be a real Jaeger?" The joke was playful, not hostile like it would have been just a few days before. "Biggers? Not bad," Amara allowed. She had a wide grin on her face just from the rush of the drift and the realization that she was in the con pod of Bracer Phoenix. It wasn't long at all since she'd been climbing out of Scrapper, figuring she was on her way to jail. Now she was on her way to saving the world instead. Renata and Ryuichi relaxed into their drift, feeling the connection like an extension of the rapport they already had from countless hours of sparring and drilling together. Saber Athena felt like an extension of themselves, a perfect match to what they were already good at. "Strong and steady," Renata said, eyeballing the readout of their neural handshake. "Just like me," Ryuichi said. They reached out and tapped fists, careful to keep Saber Athena motionless in the launch gantry. Weapon systems checked out. The readings from the thruster pods were all green. "A kaiju is going to be all like, not in the face, just like you, Ryo," Renata said. "But I'm gonna pop in the face anyway." "I knew my suffering would pay off," Ryuichi cracked back. They were both nervous, but they also couldn't wait to get rolling. Riding the drift and experiencing the power of Saber Athena, they felt like they were born for this moment. Suresh felt his pulse hammering as the neural handshake kicked in, but Ilya steadied him as he always did. Ilya took a deep breath, relaxing into the drift. Suresh calmed, too. Guardian Bravo felt solid and steady around them. Their neural handshake wavered for a moment, then settled into a strong equilibrium. They ran weapons checks. The Arc Whip had twin monitors, one for the plasma feed that energized its electrical discharge, and the other for the integrity of the graphene strand of the whip itself. Both read out perfectly. The drone assault hadn't touched them. A missile had hit the cradle near the left shoulder intake turbine, knocking it slightly off-center, but Shao Industries' tech crews had gotten it shipshape. All in all, Guardian Bravo was ready for duty. Suresh and Ilya didn't talk much as they got ready. Ilya didn't have much to say, and Suresh knew he had a tendency to start rattling on if he didn't keep his mouth shut when he was nervous. So they kept it low-key, checking everything out and waiting for their final launch orders. "Man, I can't believe I'm doing this," Suresh thought. Ilya was right there. "Be cool, Suresh. You and me will handle it." Jake and Lambert leaned into the drift, just like the old days, running the checks on Gypsy Avenger and taking brief note of the changes the techs had made since the second encounter with Obsidian Fury. Jake felt none of the nerves from the first fight in Sydney. Then he hadn't been inside a Jaeger for 10 years. Now, with 2 combat deployments in the last 10 days, he felt like he'd never been away. Lambert, whose training and conditioning ran back uninterrupted to when he was 14, rode the drift like it was second nature. They got a last status report on the location of the kaiju before entering the conpod. Just as Jake's fingertip extrapolations had suggested, Raijin, Strikethorn, and Hakuja had converged off the east coast of Kyushu, the southernmost of Japan's 4 main islands. From there, they were covering the last 400 miles or so together, apparently aiming to come ashore in Tokyo. That wasn't a direct approach to Mount Fuji, which had Gottlieb confused. He had developed a theory that they could not detect the location of Fuji while they were underwater, and so were guided by what seemed to be a kaiju instinct to approach the largest city they could find. Whatever the cause, the kaiju were holding steady on their course. Submarines from the Chinese, Russian, and American navies had attacked them with every torpedo they had, with little effect. The kaiju either ignored the subs or destroyed them if they got too close. They were due to enter the Uraga Channel and then Tokyo Bay within the next hour or so. This was grim news, because it meant the Jaegers wouldn't be there in time to stop the kaiju from attacking Tokyo. Already the city was being evacuated ahead of the expected attack. Those who could were getting out of the city, heading north because the PPDC had briefed Japanese authorities on the kaiju's expected path. But evacuating a city of 20 million took days, if not weeks, and those who could not leave in time were filling Tokyo's hundreds of kaiju shelters. The shelters had a decent track record from the kaiju war. A big kaiju intent on getting into one could do it, but the shelters were strong enough to withstand buildings collapsing on top of them, and provisioned with enough supplies to feed people trapped inside until rescuers could dig them out. In this case, if Gypsy Avenger and the other Jaegers didn't stop the 3 kaiju, it wouldn't really matter whether the shelter survived or not. Making an effort to look on the bright side, Jake realized that if the 3 kaiju had made a beeline for Mount Fuji via Suruga Bay, 100 miles to the west, the Jaegers wouldn't have been able to intercept them in time. As it was, they were cutting it very close. Within the next 2 hours, Gypsy Avenger would be toe-to-toe with a kaiju, and that battle would only end with one of them dead. That was what mattered. "All Jaegers," Lambert said over the comlink. "Sound off. Go, no go for launch."
"Guardian Bravo, go,"
Ilya said. Renata almost simultaneously. "Saber Athena, go."
"Racer Phoenix,"
Amara said.
"Let's go already."
"Copy that." Jake took one last look at the thruster pod readings, making sure there were no fuel leaks or pressure warnings. He didn't see any.
"Command, we are go for launch."
In the war room, Gottlieb surveyed the main holoscreen, watching the data readouts from the 4 Jaegers. Everything looked good as far as he could tell, but the proof would come when the thruster pods ignited. Jules Reyes hurried in from the Jaeger bay, scooting past war room techs at support terminals. She stopped next to Gottlieb, spawning a holoscreen at a terminal of her own to monitor the internal effect of the thrusters on the Jaeger systems and hull integrity. She glanced over at Gottlieb, who acknowledged her and leaned into the comm.
"Roger, Gypsy Avenger. Ignition in 10 seconds. 9, 8.
Inside each conpod, Rangers and cadets alike stared a little harder at their HUD readouts, apprehensive but eager, willing everything to work. Suresh hummed a little song to himself. Amara clenched and unclenched one fist until she noticed Bracer Phoenix was doing the same. She forced herself to remain calm. Ryuichi counted down under his breath along with Gottlieb, wondering if his life was going to end on the word ignition. Renata laughed, and in the drift he heard her thinking,
No way, you have to live long enough to beat me sparring at least once.
2, 1. Jake tensed. This was it. Ignition.
30. The Journal of Experimental Biotechnology. Volume 27, Issue 1, forthcoming. Notes on the reactive and combustive properties of kaiju blood in catalysis with lanthanide elements. Gottlieb H. K Science Division, Pan-Pacific Defense Corps. Abstract. Kaiju blood is widely understood to have corrosive properties when in physical contact with terrestrial organic material, as well as most metallic and plastic compounds. Further investigation has revealed a related property, large amounts of potential thermal energy. Initial experiments conclude that kaiju blood reacts with excess thermal energy in the presence of lanthanide elements. Potential research pathways appear fruitful in the areas of propulsion and navigation if significant obstacles related to the blood's chemical instability can be overcome. These obstacles include the narrow window of controllable combustion and resultant danger of explosion or combustion failure, the difficulty of containing kaiju blood in a vessel that will not corrode during storage and use, the difficulties in synthesizing kaiju blood, a necessary step if the technological applications of these results are ever to achieve widespread practical use. Further investigations are ongoing. With a boom that echoed out across Qingchuan Bay, the 4 thruster pods ignited. Smoke and blue-tinged flames blasted out across the tarmac, wreathing the gantries in smoke. Slowly each Jaeger began to rise on a pillar of fire. Gottlieb held his breath. The thruster pods had passed their first test by not exploding at ignition. But could they generate enough thrust? The mathematics said they could, but the mathematics had never been tested against these materials in this situation. That was the second test, whether the machines could withstand the liftoff. Jaegers were designed to absorb tremendous amounts of force via direct impact, but vibrational energies were different. Gottlieb had kept quiet about this. But he was haunted by the possibility that the thruster pods would work and the con pods would shake themselves to pieces due to the Jaeger's lack of aerodynamic design. Video feeds from inside the con pods heightened his fears. They shook so violently that the pilot's vital signs registered spikes in pulses and breathing rates. He heard warning alarms blaring from inside Guardian Bravo's con pod. Suresh couldn't help himself.
That's not a good sound.
Inside Gypsy Avengers' con pod, Jake and Lambert shared a nervous glance. Jake looked up at the top of the con pod, violently shaking even though the maglev field held him and Lambert fairly steady.
"Come on, girl," he breathed. "Hold together."
The Jaegers reached an altitude of 50 feet, then 100, then 500, and gradually their momentum took over and the shaking diminished. All 4 together arced across the sky to the east, trailing plumes of smoke and the sound of receding thunder. Gottlieb watched them, then looked back at the monitors. The pods were holding together. The Jaegers were holding together. All alarms had switched themselves off as self-analytic subroutines determined there was no systemic damage. Cheers echoed through the war room. Gottlieb slumped into his chair, utterly drained. With a weak grin in Jules's direction, he said,
"Knew it would work."
According to Gottlieb's projections, the Jaegers would cover the distance from the Moyolin Shatter Dome to Tokyo Bay in about 90 minutes. Half an hour in, he asked them for a status update.
"From here, it appears the thruster pods are working as designed," he said. "Please advise if you are seeing anything different."
"We're flying," Lambert said. "That's the important thing."
"Vibrations are way down since liftoff. Everything is smooth," Jake added. "Guardian Bravo, Bracer Phoenix, Saber Athena. Let Dr. Gottlieb know if you've got any problems."
"Is there going to be an inflate meal?" Amara joked.
Vic chimed in from Bracer Phoenix, stopping Amara before she joked again.
"We are flying stable and steady. All systems appear normal."
"Here too," Ryuichi said from Saber Athena.
The Jaegers, holding formation, passed over the coast of Kyushu. Ahead of them stretched the mountainous mainland of Japan, green and streaked with clouds. Soon they would get a visual on Mount Fuji, but they wouldn't be stopping there. As expected, the kaiju were coming ashore in Tokyo Bay.
"Ranger Lambert."
It was Ilya on the comm.
"No problems on Guardian Bravo. Should some of us divert and set up a defensive position at Mount Fuji?"
Lambert considered this, but not for long. Negative, we've got 3 kaiju in Tokyo. The sooner we can get there and engage them, the more lives we're going to save.
I don't understand why they didn't go ashore in Suruga Bay.
Gottlieb was complaining. Irrational behavior bothered him almost as much as the fact of the kaiju trying to end the world.
Thought you had a theory about that, Jake reminded him. Yes, but I have no way to test it, so it remains an unsatisfying conjecture,
Gottlieb said. We'll make sure to ask Geisler when we track him down, Lambert said. Any news on that front?
No, Gottlieb answered. That worries me. Newton enjoys gloating, as you know, and the presence of the precursors in his mind exacerbates that character flaw. The longer he goes without showing himself, the more I begin to fear he has another, what is the expression, trick up his sleeve.
I hope you're wrong about that, Doc, Lambert said. We're not playing with a full deck as it is.
I don't, yes, full deck.
Gottlieb forced a polite chuckle.
I too hope I am wrong. We shall see.
31. Kaiju make landfall in Japan. City largely evacuated. Preparation hailed. The 3 kaiju that appeared through multiple breaches less than 24 hours ago made a rendezvous at the eastern end of the Tsugaru Straits and turned south together toward Tokyo. Kaiju have never been observed to work together in this way before, so scientists in the Pan-Pacific Defense Corps and elsewhere have been at a loss to explain the behavior. Anticipating a kaiju incursion, every sizable city in Japan has been evacuated. Those who could not get inland have found space in the island nation's numerous kaiju shelters, said to be able to withstand a pressure of 10,000 tons and offer accommodations to nearly 5 million people just in the greater Tokyo-Osaka area alone. Information from the site of the kaiju landfall is scarce, though it is known they have destroyed parts of the Rainbow Bridge and numerous other structures at the edge of Tokyo Bay. Jaegers from the Moyolin Shatter Dome, the nearest PPDC facility with active Jaegers after the devastating drone failure, are said to be deploying soon, but observers in the area report none have arrived so far. It is reported that the kaiju have inflicted widespread damage on the city center and are moving to the southwest, but due to the mandatory evacuations, reliable information from the area is difficult to find. Where the kaiju intend to go, or whether they have any intent at all, remains to be seen.
Raijin, Hakuja, and Shrikethorn rampage through Shibuya. Behind them, a path of destruction a half mile wide stretched back to the famed Rainbow Bridge. Its curling approach ramp collapsed into the bay where they had come ashore. 1,000 fires burned in the crushed remains of buildings. Near the kaiju, those who had not yet gotten to a shelter fled in desperate throngs through the streets. In the wake of their passage, rescue operations were already beginning. Raijin paused and reared up on its hind legs. It roared, drawing the attention of Hakuja and Strikethorn. All 3 kaiju swung around and saw the white-capped peak of Mount Fuji looming in the distance to the west. They changed course and plowed forward, destroying whatever was in their path.
"Did you see that?" Gottlieb said over the comm. "They are communicating. Raijin spotted Mount Fuji and relayed that information to the others. This is extraordinary."
"Extraordinary, got it." Jake was looking down as Gypsy Avenger streaked toward the kaiju. They were nearly close enough and closing in fast. He took the brief moment they had to get a visual sense of the 3 kaiju and how they moved. The images of Gottlieb had captured from their individual breach passages were sketchy, and didn't show much about how they moved. Now Jake soaked up every detail he could, knowing any one bit of information could mean the difference between victory and the end of the world. This was part of ranger training, to study kaiju and draw terrestrial equivalents as a way of anticipating how an individual monster might fight. It was an inexact science, but Jake knew of cases from the kaiju war where it had saved ranger lives. Raijin was the biggest of the 3, and Jake thought Gottlieb was right that it was intentionally leading the other 2. At a glance, Jake pegged it to be 100 meters tall or so, but that was hard to guess with any precision because of the bony plates on its head and the way it leaned forward as it ran. It was bipedal, with heavy bone structures at its hips and a long tail that balanced the weight of its head. Its paws, each with 2 fingers and a hooked shorter thumb, were tipped with hooked claws that glowed blue even in the bright sunlight. Whenever they touched something else, some kind of destructive energy flared. But its head was the unusual thing about it.
Heavy armor plates tipped with spikes ringed its face and jaws, but the spikes faced inward. Between the plates, its brain glowed an angry red over an interior bony structure, including fanged jaws big enough to swallow a school bus. There were rows of bright blue eyes on both the outside armor plates and the central face, under the infernal glow shining through the top of its head. Just behind it, Strikethorn was nearly as tall, but more massive, and with two tails curling up over its back. The tip of each tail bristled with long spikes, and heavier spines grew from its arms and neck. The front of its head was a flat, bony projection, similar to a hammerhead shark's, with a row of eyes at each end. When it opened its mouth, blue light glowed from inside, the same color as Raijin's eyes. That thought gave Jake an insight. All of Strikethorn's spikes faced forward on the front edge of its bony head. That might be useful to know. He filed it away for the fight to come. He also noticed that some of the spikes from its tail were embedded in nearby buildings. Jake couldn't tell if this had happened while it dragged its tail along the front of a building, or Strikethorn could somehow fire the spikes. He had a feeling he might learn for certain sooner rather than later. Unlike the other two, Hakuja was comparatively low to the ground, with squat, heavy legs and thick segmented armor plates running down its back, from the back of its head to the base of its tail. The tail was armored too, and shorter than either Raijin's or Strikethorn's. Its head was flat, with flaring bony protrusions on either side and pointed jaws. Three small eyes on either side of its snout burned a deep orange. Two spikes jutted up from the tip of the lower jaw, and when it roared, Jake saw its tongue was bifurcated. Its claws had a different design than the other two as well, with three clawed fingers evenly spaced instead of the shorter, opposable digit Jake saw on Raijin and Strikethorn. The claws were long and hooked and also thick. They put Jake in mind of a badger or a bear. He absorbed all that in the seconds between Gottlieb's observation and the chime from their HUD that they were nearing contact. "Go," Lambert said. He jabbed the HUD and Gypsy Avenger's thruster pod cut out, dropping the Jaeger into a controlled feet-first fall directly toward Raijin. The kaiju never looked up before Gypsy slammed down on it, smashing it into the ground. Before it could get up, Gypsy collared it and flipped it judo style into a nearby building. The counterforce and the leftover momentum from their dive kept Gypsy Avenger skidding down the street for several blocks, plowing up asphalt and cars until she ground to a stop. Jake and Lambert stood up straight again and raised Gypsy Avenger's right hand, smacking her left fist into it. This was their acknowledgement of tradition. Raleigh Beckett had done this, first with his brother Yancey, and then with Mako Mori. To Jake, it was a salute to all their sacrifices, but particularly his sister's. He was fighting for the survival of the human race, but fighting to avenge his sister, too. Somewhere, maybe she was watching. Maybe his father was, too. "Gypsy to command," Lambert said. "Targets acquired."
"Roger that, Gypsy,"
Gottlieb answered. He was still uncertain about combat radio protocols. They heard him doing something in the war room, and a moment later he said,
"Everyone in the area is secured in underground shelters. You're cleared to engage."
That was one good thing, Jake thought. Their correct guess about where the kaiju were headed meant they'd had time to get civilians out of the way. Diverting to save civilian populations caught in a battle had often put Jaegers in a vulnerable position in the past. "Solid copy," he confirmed. "Going hot." Guardian Bravo and Saber Athena landed beside Gypsy Avenger and jettisoned their thruster pods. A moment later, Bracer Phoenix joined them, moving too fast to stay upright. She skidded through a plaza, crushing trees and benches before getting her balance back. Jake heard Amara over the comm, trying to play it cool as always.
"I meant to do that."
"Bracer Phoenix on me, we'll take Raijin," Jake ordered. "Saber Athena, Guardian Bravo, you take the other two." Saber Athena was on Hakuja's side, and Jake thought it made sense to pit her superior speed against the slowest of the kaiju.
"Copy that,"
he heard Suresh respond. Then, almost like he was convincing himself, Suresh added, "We were born to save the world."
"On my mark," Lambert said. The kaiju roared out a challenge. 3, 2, 1, mark.
The four Jaegers charged down the empty avenue toward the kaiju. Saber Athena surged ahead, whipping her plasma swords out from their back-mounted sheaths and striking Hakuja faster than the kaiju could defend. The plasma blade scored deep gouges in Hakuja's armor. Hakuja lunged at Saber Athena, but the Jaeger was much too fast, spinning into a reverse kick that flung the kaiju back to crash against a glass office building. Hakuja staggered, trying to recover. Gypsy, at her own full speed, stormed past Hakuja and put everything she had into an overhand right, aiming straight at Raijin's face. Around the jaws, Jake and Lambert thought the skull tissue looked vulnerable. But in mid-swing, the armored plates around Raijin's head snapped closed, and the kaiju tensed for the impact. The punch landed with everything Gypsy Avenger had. Jake and Lambert felt the shock all through the Jaeger's frame, but Raijin didn't go down. From the point of impact, blue lines of energy radiated out along the plates, crackling down Raijin's arms into its claws. They flared the same color of blue, and Raijin struck back. The glowing claws raked across Gypsy's shoulder and torso. Gypsy shuddered from the blow, and the next thing Jake and Lambert knew, they were catapulted through the air. Bracer Phoenix ducked, and Gypsy Avenger sailed past, smashing into the side of a building. Bracer Phoenix stood again and advanced, firing a barrage of missiles from her shoulder mounts. Explosions bloomed across the kaiju's body as Bracer closed to within striking distance. At first, Raijin flinched away from the missiles, but as the explosions died away, it spun back to its full height, backhanding Bracer Phoenix before the three cadets inside could get close enough to grapple. Knocked off her feet, Bracer destroyed a small building and sprawled in the rubble over on the next street. The battlefield footing was already treacherous, with mounds of rubble shifting under the combatants' feet. Like Bracer Phoenix, Guardian Bravo had launched a missile salvo to give her cover for a close approach. The first volley hit the target and she fired again, charging closer to Strikethorn, and then skidded to an emergency stop as Bracer Phoenix crashed down in front of her. She barely stopped in time, dragging a fist on the street and setting off a car alarm near Bracer Phoenix's head. Gypsy Avenger was just then getting back to her feet after the stunning force of Raijin's blow. Jake couldn't figure out how it had delivered so much power just with its claws, and through the drift he could tell Lambert was just as confused. Then Gottlieb solved the problem, thanks to the data feeds from the battlefield back to the war room.
Gypsy, Raijin's faceplates are absorbing your hits and throwing the energy back at you.
That was a problem. If you couldn't punch an enemy in the face, your options for winning were compromised. Down the street, Raijin was coming after them again, its bony plates open so it could see the way ahead. Jake had an idea.
Let's see it absorb this,
he said, and touched the command to activate the gravity sling. Gypsy Avenger's right hand reconfigured into the lens array, and she reached out, catching a nearby building and dragging it down on top of Raijin. 50 stories of concrete and steel crashed down on the kaiju, knocking it flat and momentarily obscuring it in a cloud of dust. But Raijin shook it off and kept coming. Gypsy hit the kaiju with another building, and another, over and over, toppling entire blocks of office towers to thunder down on Raijin.
Let's see how many buildings this thing can take,
Jake said grimly, reaching for another. Sooner or later, it had to go down. As Gypsy reached for another building, Saber Athena was tracking Hakuja and found the armored kaiju tensing to spring on Gypsy Avenger from behind.
Oh, no, you don't,
Renata said, leaning into a sprint. She and Ryuichi timed the last steps to hit Hakuja with a flying knee, smashing into the side of its head just below the row of eyes. The other side of its head crushed several floors of the building it had been using as cover for its planned ambush of Gypsy Avenger, who was slinging down more buildings on Raijin. The Cat 5 was moving more slowly now, but it was still coming. Gypsy backed away before it, drawing it on. Hakuja pivoted round to attack Saber Athena, hooking its claws into the Jaeger's armor. Saber Athena drove punch after punch into Hakuja's bony head, pummeling the kaiju down. Renata and Ryuichi were so focused on their target that they didn't notice Saber Athena's HUD, showing Strikethorn coming around the corner two blocks behind them. Strikethorn roared and its twin tails snapped up over its head. Dozens of armored spikes launched from the tails. Most of them crashed through the building still standing near Saber Athena and Hakuja, but several punched into Saber Athena's armor, burying themselves deep. Renata and Ryuichi cried out at the holographic impression of pain, momentarily losing their focus on Hakuja. The kaiju was quick to seize the opportunity. It leaped up on Saber Athena, gripping with its front paws and raking with the rear. Its immense mass drove Saber Athena back and she fell, demolishing the front of a kaiju museum erected near the spot where Onibaba had once fallen. The ranger who put it down was Stacker Pentecost. Somewhere around here was the alley where Mako, terrified and wearing one shoe, had survived the battle and seen her adoptive father for the first time.
Too many echoes, Jake thought. We've done this too many times. It has to end.
Saber Athena was deadly on her feet, but grappling on the ground, Hakuja had the advantage. The kaiju snapped and tore at Saber Athena's armor, as Renata and Ryuichi fought to fend it off. They were keeping it from Saber Athena's head, but if they couldn't get up, they wouldn't be able to hold on forever. And things were about to get worse, because Strikethorn was loping toward them, aiming to finish Saber Athena off.
"Strikethorn inbound!"
Ryuichi shouted. Renata activated their comm.
"Hey guys, we could use a little help over here!"
Racer Phoenix had suffered a system brownout when Raijin nailed them with the stored kinetic energy of Gypsy Avenger's punch. They were just now back online and on their feet.
"Copy that,"
Amara answered.
"Vic, take out Strikethorn."
"On it."
Vic touched a screen and the recessed floor under her drift cradle opened. She dropped down, still linked to her partners, 15 stories in a flash, slamming to a halt in the firing emplacement behind the quad-mounted railguns built into Bracer Phoenix's midsection. They were built on a track that gave them a 360-degree field of fire, and Vic had them powered up and locked in on Strikethorn before the spiky kaiju could get its claws into Saber Athena. The barrage of railgun shells tore into Strikethorn, blasting away pieces of its armor and splattering the street with kaiju blood. Strikethorn reared back and sprang away from Saber Athena to come after Bracer Phoenix, who held steady, forcing Strikethorn to come straight through the railgun fire. Guardian Bravo had also heard Renata's distress call. Zeresh and Ilya were coming in hot, skirting the valley of collapsed buildings where Gypsy Avenger still battled Raijin.
"Saber Athena, Guardian Bravo coming to assist!"
"Activating Arc Whip,"
Ilya said calmly. Power surged inside Guardian Bravo's conpod, brightening all the displays as the Arc Whip came online. Guardian Bravo slung the whip out to one side, flicking it out to its full length and leaping forward. They came down just behind Hakuja, slashing the whip down across the kaiju's back. The unbreakable graphene strand cracked the armored plates on Hakuja's back and delivered a staggering punch of energy besides. Hakuja spasmed, letting go of Saber Athena. As the kaiju turned to face Guardian Bravo, Ilya and Suresh were already spinning through a full turn, sweeping the whip around to snap into Hakuja's midsection. The force of the blow lifted the kaiju off its feet and smashed it straight through a building back into the main avenue, where Gypsy Avenger was still dropping buildings on Raijin. Hakuja bellowed in wounded fury, the sound shaking down rubble from partially destroyed buildings. Then it bent and dug into the ground. Seconds later, it was gone.
"Yeah, that's right, you better run!"
Suresh crowed, seeing the kaiju flee. He looked over at Ilya, all of his normal diffidence swept away by the euphoria of the battle.
"These things ain't that tough."
Behind them, Bracer Phoenix was still holding Strikethorn at bay with a railgun. Before them, Gypsy Avenger snapped the gravity sling again, and another skyscraper fell, crushing Raij into the ground once more. The street heaved under Gypsy Avenger, and the Jaeger lost her balance momentarily. Inside the conpod, HUD showed Jake the locations of all Jaegers and kaiju in the field. He saw Hakuja on the move, passing directly beneath them, and headed toward Bracer Phoenix.
"Bracer, check your six,"
he called, amazed that a creature that size could move so fast underground.
"Hostile inbound."
Vic was on it.
"Copy that,"
she answered, watching her own HUD inside the railgun turret. She spotted the approaching kaiju bogey and kicked the turret into a 180, swiveling it around just as Hakuja burst up through the street behind them and an eruption of concrete, earth, and water sprang from broken pipes. Vic was already firing as she saw the kaiju, blasting it point-blank in the face with all four barrels.
"Yeah!"
she shouted, seeing the Hakuja stunned by the ambush.
"Get some!"
Guardian Bravo was closing in on Strikethorn from one direction, flicking the arc whip out to full extension as Saber Athena dug herself out of the kaiju museum and attacked Strikethorn from the other direction. Bracer Phoenix kept pounding Hakuja, keeping the bloodied kaiju from getting all the way out of the tunnel it had dug under the street. Gypsy Avenger brought one more building down on Raijin, reaching over a block to sling the biggest skyscraper yet. The cumulative beating and the greater mass of this last building finally stopped Raijin. The huge kaiju struggled to free itself from the mass of girders and concrete, shrieking in anger and frustration. Finally, it was a static target, and Gypsy Avenger took advantage with a barrage of plasma missiles. Jake almost didn't dare to believe it, but he thought they might have the kaiju on the ropes. 32. Editorial. Okay, fine.
I was wrong. How much more do I need to say? A week ago, I believed that the drone Jaegers were the future, that we didn't need the PPDC, that we should just turn the whole thing over to the genius in white, Xiao Lian, and let her handle Jaegers from here on out. Well, that first drone deployment showed me the error of my ways, didn't it? And then new breaches opened up, and now the word from Tokyo is there are 4 Jaegers, human-powered Jaegers, with a total of 9 Rangers, and may God bless every one of them, putting the boot to the kaiju. Where are the drones? In pieces, because they got corrupted, either by a software flaw or some kind of kaiju thing. Depends on which rumors you believe, but you know what? It doesn't matter. Real people are out fighting this battle for us. They're in machines, but they aren't machines. We need to remember that. We need to put ourselves on the line for each other and not sit back and wait for machines to do it for us. Go get 'em, Rangers. I'll never say a bad word about the PBDC again. Note. Not the god of kaiju nuts, who seem to think God is some kind of Cthulhu. A machine shop deep in the bowels of the Shatter Dome, Xiao Lian was watching the feed from Tokyo. She was filthy, stained with sweat and grease from the machine she was working on. After the Jaegers had launched, she had realized there was possibly one more thing she could do to help. But judging from what she saw on the screen, maybe they didn't need any more of her help. "They're winning," she said, trying not to sound too surprised. "That's what we do," Gottlieb said from the war room. Then after a pause, he added, "Most of the time." He was watching the same holofeed Xiao had down in the machine shop. Akuja was badly wounded, Strikethorn and Raijin hurting but still dangerous. The fight wasn't over yet, but all 4 Jaegers were still in good shape. Only Saber Athena had suffered any damage to speak of. And even though the battle between Jaeger and Kaiju had already moved miles toward the outskirts of the Tokyo megacity, Mount Fuji was still miles away. For the first time since he had understood the Precursor's plan, Gottlieb was feeling confident, at least mostly confident, that they were going to win. The holoscreen over his terminal, showing operational data on all 4 Jaegers as well as assessments of the Kaiju status, flickered and went out. A moment later it came back on, but now the data visualization was replaced by a head-and-shoulder shot of Newt Geisler, looking into what must have been a datapad camera. Behind him, part of a Xiao V-Dragon was visible on what must have been a rooftop, against the backdrop of the Tokyo skyline. In the middle distance, Gottlieb could see the smoke rising from the site of the battle, and hear the roars of the kaiju over the thunder of railguns and missiles. Far away, partially masked by the smoke, was the magnificent peak of Mount Fuji.
"Newton,"
Gottlieb said, his tone accusatory and worried and angry all at once.
"Hey, buddy," Newt said. "Moshi moshi. So you finally figured out your little rockets. Good for you, Hairman."
He put a little mocking twist on Gottlieb's name.
"That's not all we've figured out," Hairman said.
Jules had seen Newt appear and left her terminal to stand next to Hairman.
"We know what you're trying to do."
"It's not him," Gottlieb objected. "It's those things in his head."
Newt shrugged. "Everybody has things in their head. Mine are just a lot more fun."
"I've been in your mind too, Newton,"
Gottlieb reminded him. He had to appeal to the connection between them, the history they had shared, the awful danger of the kaiju drift they had survived together. That was the only way they might be able to bring him back.
"You're stronger than they know. You can fight them. You can stop them from doing this."
Just as it had the last time, this appeal seemed to give Newt, the real Newt, a momentary burst of strength. He twitched, trying to break free of the precursor control.
I couldn't stop drifting with the kaiju brain. I tried, but she made me feel so alive. They're in my mind. They're controlling me. I'm sorry, Hairman." "You can fight them," Gottlieb cried. "You can stop them from doing this."
For a moment, Newt froze, and when he could move again, Gottlieb could tell the moment had passed. The precursors were in control again.
"Nice try," Newt sneered. "You don't even know what this is. How all the pieces fit together. Want me to show you? Want to see what else I was whipping up in Siberia? Yes? No? How about yes?"
He raised one finger in a flourish and stabbed it down onto his data pad, holding eye contact through the camera the whole time.
"This is going to be so cool," he said. "I mean, not for you guys. For you it's going to suck. Sorry, but not really."
The screen went blank. A PBDC combat operations tech near Gottlieb straightened and tensed as her screen lit up with multiple new bogeys.
"We got movement. Multiple hostiles, 3 kilometers southeast."
She swiped the tactical view over to the main holo screen at the center of the war room. A cluster of red dots had sprung to life near the group of Jaegers. Gottlieb immediately got on the comm.
Command to strike team, are you reading this?
He heard Jake first.
Where'd they come from?
Gottlieb didn't have a read on the location, or for that matter what all the bogeys were. Before he could say anything, he heard Shao over the internal Shatterdome comm from down in the machine shop.
That's one of my automated factories, she said.
Gottlieb remembered Newt telling her that he had commandeered production at her automated facilities. He had managed to build an entire Jaeger with nobody noticing. These bogeys weren't that big, but there were... He tried to count them and lost track. They were too close together. What could they be?
Newt, Lambert growled.
He tapped at the HUD, triangulating his signal. Now that they had the Kaiju on the ropes, he was already thinking forward to when they could put the traitorous scientist in handcuffs. Or in the ground. That would be fine with him, too. When the HUD had stored Geisler's location, Lambert returned to the main tactical HUD view. Hostiles are 1 kilometer in closing.
Damn it, Jake thought. They were minutes from putting the Kaiju down for good. Bracer's railgun shells had shattered Hakuja's armor. The combined attack of Guardian Bravo and Saber Athena had Strikethorn down, and Raijin was still trapped under the last building Gypsy Avenger had dropped on it.
But they had to meet this new threat, at least for long enough to figure out what it was.
All Jaegers, disengage from Kaiju and brace for contact, he called over the comm.
The 4 Jaegers stepped back from the battered Kaiju and turned just as the new threat appeared. Swarming around the corner from the direction of Shao's factory came a tidal wave of tentacled cyborg monstrosities the size of a small truck. They flooded the street and surged up and over the collapsed remains of all the buildings Gypsy Avenger had thrown down with a gravity sling. They looked like Kaiju, with fanged mouths and multiple glowing eyes surrounded by a fan of cranial spikes. Ridges of bone-like protrusions ran down their backs, flattening into smaller spikes that stuck out laterally from their tails. But at the same time, they were obviously mechanical, with metallic alloys formed to resemble the organic features of a true Kaiju. They moved in leaps and bounds, springing and scuttling by the hundred toward the waiting Jaegers. The chittering, buzzing noises they made merged into a sonic assault like a million cicadas, maddening in its intensity even though the Jaeger sensors did all they could to filter and deaden the cacophony. Jake watched the HUD as it tried to target them and failed. There were too many, moving too fast. One of them, or even a dozen, probably couldn't have done much damage to a Jaeger before the Jaeger got a grip on them and just crushed them in her fists. But this many? How could they fight this many?
Any ideas, Gottlieb?
He asked. Gottlieb was silent. Everyone in the war room was stunned. This wasn't a threat Jaegers were designed to address. Down in the machine shop, Xiao Lien looked on in horror, realizing just how completely she had been deceived. Newt Geisler had turned her genius against her. He had made Xiao Industries into the engine of humanity's end. Bracer Phoenix opened up with a railgun, raking the swarm without making an appreciable difference in its numbers. They didn't even try to avoid the barrage.
Hold your fire, Bracer, Jake ordered.
With more confidence than he felt, he explained. We're going to need that railgun loaded when we take care of these little ones and get back to the real fight. But this was the real fight, at least right now. The swarm poured toward them, the sound growing even louder, and the Jaegers braced for it. From the rooftop, Newt watched. The Ripper swarm was a thing of beauty. He had made them all by himself. Well, okay, he'd had a little help in the form of design suggestions from the precursors, but his hands had typed the code. It made him proud to look at them. The Jaeger pilots must have been completely terrified. Newt wanted to let them stay in that headspace for as long as possible, but it was time for the real show to begin. All good things must come to an end, he told himself, like the human race. He touched a blinking button on his datapad. When the robots were within 100 yards of the Jaegers, they dropped into fighting crouches, and then their heads turned as the swarm abruptly changed course. Instead of stampeding into the waiting Jaegers, they veered off to the side, around the block, toward the wounded Kaiju, lying near each other between the pit Hakuja had dug and the toppled tower pinning Raijin. The swarm poured over the Kaiju, and within seconds the Kaiju had disappeared under the hundreds, maybe thousands of silvery bodies. They roared in agony, rearing up and then falling back into the churning mass.
What are they doing?
Ilya wondered aloud. Are they on our side?
Amara echoed the question. The Jaeger stood back and watched, completely mystified by what they were seeing and hearing.
Dude, Suresh said, that is so nasty.
In the war room, Gottlieb and Jules stood together as the three big kaiju bogies were blotted out by the horde of smaller red dots. The surveillance display started to behave erratically. One of the big bogies seemed to blink out, but a moment later it was back as several smaller ones, but not as small as the individual members of the swarm. Then it was one single bogey again, larger than before. The others began to coalesce as well, a galaxy of tiny red dots, adding themselves to the three larger ones, reconfiguring them. Gottlieb had a terrible realization.
I don't think so,
he said slowly, answering Ilya's question. On the street, Jake watched the activity in and around the pit subside. Smoke and dust rose into the air. It looked like the army of smaller kaiju robots had completely consumed the larger kaiju. No sign of them remained. But on the HUD, there was one immense bogey. They felt the ground beneath them shake and saw a motion in the pit. Something began to rise. At first they thought it was one of the kaiju, with the smaller creatures hanging on it the way remoras hung on a shark. Then it kept rising, and the watching pilot saw that its head was no longer just Raijin's head, or Hakuja's, or Strikethorn's. It was bigger than any of them. Bigger, Jake realized with a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach, than all three of them put together. It kept rising, standing up out of the pit, and Jake realized that Newt Geisler had saved the best part of his plan for last. He had waited until the kaiju were already wounded, perhaps dying, and then pulled off the ultimate Dr. Frankenstein trick, remaking all three kaiju into one gargantuan monster. Its head was as big as any of the Jaegers, and when it reached its full height, it was as tall as any of the buildings remaining in that part of Tokyo. The smaller robotic creatures were gone, folded into its mass. Some of them were still visible as attachments to its tail and the edges of its armored carapace. Others were completely gone, chewed to pieces and remade. Stunned, they watched it emerge from the pit, pieces of itself still knitting themselves into place. The last to come together was its jaw, still pointed like Raijin's but bearing 200-foot spikes like Strikethorn's. The blue glow of kaiju energy emanated from its throat and glittered in thousands of points on its back and limbs, where the smaller bots had stitched themselves together in a flexible plated exoskeleton. As its shadow fell over the Jaegers, Lambert said, "Well, he's pretty big." On the rooftop, Newt felt a surge of pride. Until he'd seen it happen, he hadn't been 100% sure the plan would work. But now he knew he never should have doubted himself. He'd run the numbers. He'd reworked the design 100 times over 10 years. The Rippers had been created for one purpose, and they had served that purpose perfectly. He wondered what Herrmann was thinking now. Who was the real genius? This was K-Science, baby, the real deal, the greatest accomplishment of a human mind, and the last. Newt knew he was destroying the human race, and even knew he should feel guilty about it. But the precursors had shut him off from that part of himself. All he could feel was exultation at his creation and at the power he had brought into this world. Across the devastated battlefield, Mega Kaiju roared. The ripple of sound shattered windows for miles and lifted destroyed cars from the few remaining clear areas on the streets. It stepped up out of the pit and lumbered toward the Jaegers, gathering speed. As it went, its tail twitched, each flick destroying anything in its path.
"This is the way the world ends," Newt said with cold satisfaction. "Not with a whimper, but with a bang, a very, very big bang."
In Gypsy Avenger's conpod, Jake gave the only order he could.
"All Jaegers, advance and fire everything you've got!"
Gypsy led the way, barraging the Mega Kaiju with rockets and using the gravity sling to batter it with rubble. The other three Jaegers advanced in a flanking formation, unloading with plasma cannons and particle beams. Missiles exploded harmlessly or deflected off the plating, which absorbed the energies of the cannons as well. The Mega Kaiju rocked back on its haunches and pounded a fist into the ground with a tectonic boom. The shockwave rolled down the devastated street, throwing all four Jaegers into the air. In four conpods, alarms sounded and pilots flailed for balance as they found themselves suddenly weightless. The Jaegers mimicked the motion, their gyroscopic equilibrium destabilized by the shock, and their conpods' maglev fields malfunctioning in the absence of directional gravity. All of them landed in an awkward heap, except for Guardian Bravo, who managed to keep her feet.